So we're here at the main hub in Jackson, Maine with Farmer Mark from, what's the name of your farm?
Monroe?
That's the town we're in.
But what's the name of your farm?
Well, we used to call it Teletane Farm, but I think we're going to change the name because we're going to set up a different website.
Okay. So right now, we're just going to keep calling you Farmer Mark, but I was super excited to meet with you because you're right here in our neighborhood. And you're an incredible resource. I mean, I learned so much from that talk the other day around the fire. I know you could talk for a couple hours, but just a brief introduction of what you're trying to do to spread the wisdom that you have around organic gardening and more.
Well, let's see. In that location, we've farmed for 43 years so far. And I used to live on the coast, but you can't buy a farm out on the sea. So along with operating our own farm, which is sort of like a holding ground for varieties, and it's a proving ground for the consulting business that I have.
Which is like an ER for farmers that
emergency
you come in.
Emergency room farm service.
Yep.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? An emergency room farmer.
The phone rings when there's trouble, not when things are going good. But it's good. It gets me all over the country and into other countries and Puerto Rico and places. But it's nice to have a home base. Because if I go and learn something, say, in China or somewhere else, or Central America, I want to be able to prove it works at home, too. So that's sort of a difference between people who are full-time consulting or selling something like salespeople in agriculture. A lot of the salespeople wouldn't possibly run a farm. They're too busy selling. And I would rather be the other way around. I'd rather say, this is how something is done, not for the lack of inputs, but for the lack of understanding how soil really works or crops really function.
And I love that you're like actually testing all of this out and just give people an idea of what you're growing, because that was the other thing. I mean, you're not just growing vegetables. I mean,
we grow a lot of vegetables, but we also grow a lot of medicinal herbs and I guess people would call it permaculture. We never really thought about that term until other people would show up and say, oh, it's a permaculture farm. So whatever. We grow a lot of the herbs under the fruit trees and nut trees. We have probably a little, plus or minus 100 fruit trees, kiwis, nut trees, plums, stuff like that. And that keeps us really busy. And then we also grow grain because almost everybody has got some dry seed or grain crop in their life that we consume. And there's very, very few people doing that in the Northeast states anymore. I mean, Maine used to be called the breadbasket of the colonies 250 years ago for a good reason. And before this was a state, most of the wheat that fed the U.S. colonial coast came from Arista County. And as far back as the early to mid-1800s in the Registry of Agriculture, each town listed how many sheep, cattle, bushels of grain and were produced, or how many logs were sawn, and how many mills or orchards there were. It was a real fantastic inventory that we no longer do anymore. But Jackson and Monroe and the towns around here, which are not big, wide open field territory, still had an awful lot going on. You know, wealth was measured in terms of gallons of maple syrup or cider pressed, and that sort of thing. So the economies of even in a little itty-bitty town like Monroe, which had three sawmills at least at all times, and more than one grist mill, which means grist means grinding, milling of grain. I think in 1830s, Monroe, which is not known for anything agricultural anymore, had 5,000 surplus bushels of wheat to sell.
Wow.
Unrealistically off of people's radar. And it had several orchards and a cheese factory. And cheese was sold all over Europe from Monroe. So that's how busy these little towns were.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And there's still the old cooling tub out in the middle of the field that was where the cold water from the spring was pumped to cool down the cheese.
Wow.
It still sits there.
Where is that? That's on your property?
No.
Or a different one in Monroe?
On the stream road near the river as you go out of town towards Frankfort.
Okay.
It's just this little hunk of concrete that no one remembers what it was.
Wow.
But all the towns had this going on. And So the nature of small-scale agriculture is extreme diversity. And up until probably, I would say, the 30s and 40s, maybe even as late as the 50s, most of the towns in rural New England were 100% food sovereign. There's not a thing that was required. There was always an extra production of things going out instead of things having to come in.
So do you think this current return to the land and people talking about food sovereignty and things like permaculture, I mean, it's completely doable with the idea of what we're looking to do, and not just do it, but educate people at the same time, because a lot of this knowledge needs to be passed on?
Yeah, we're just skipping roughly two generations where it was lost, especially at the just post-World War II, things sort of collapsed. And that knowledge was pretty much spaced out. It used to be always handed down within families, and towns would trade. You know, you'd intermarry within your town or next town over. There wasn't any of this great world traveling culture. But this is sort of like the third or fourth wave of people going back to the land here. This is not the first time this has happened. But the times we live in require it now, because the centralized food distribution and goods, you know, everything, metal and wood and fuels, is all coming. It's unraveling.
Yeah.
So it has to be much more localized. You know, the hubs have to be, you know, pretty short range. So that's where the really old timers are still alive, love to, like, come out of the woodwork and say, yep, this is how we used to do it. I didn't think anybody cared anymore.
Right.
Now it's the other way around. Now it's like, if they're still alive, or their grandkids are alive, then people are starting to pull it back again.
Well, we're grateful that you're here on the land where we're trying to make that happen. So grateful for you being here and just excited to learn from you.
Oh, well, working in the woods and building soil and growing crops and, you know, root cellaring and, like, putting food by, that's sort of like that's the human thing to do on this planet, really. That's how everything happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good.
Thanks, Mark.